Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Afura Kanu Afurai Kaitnut Neye Akanpo Nanasom Da Medinde Ojirapo Kwesi Rane Mpata Akan Akwamumain Amaruka Etipi Mu Ojirapo Ojiramain Mu. Greetings to all Afura Kani Afurai Kaitnut people, meaning Africans, black people today. Akanpo Nanasom Day, ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Ranehmpata Akan, Ojirapo the Akwamu Nation in North America, within Ojiramai, the purified nation, Afurakani, Afurai Kaini, people in the Western Hemisphere. Yet I say we thank you once again for tuning into the broadcast. We have opened up the chat room. If you have any questions or comments and you'd like to interact in the chat room, you must log in as a user in order to interact. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number 1 so that we can see that your hand is raised. For those who are new to the broadcast, we have 4 broadcasts on a weekly basis. We have Akanpo Nanasom, ancient authentic Akan ancestry religion, on Joda on Monday nights, where we deal specifically with the Akan expression of Nanasom, of ancestry religion. First and foremost, because we are Akan. Secondly, because of the misinformation being propagated regarding Akan ancestry religion, not only in the Western Hemisphere, but also from those individuals in Afuraka, Afuraikai, Africa, who have been corrupted by white pseudo-religion and fictional cartoon characters who never existed, including Jesus, Yeshua in the Bible, Muhammad in the Quran, the various characters, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, and so forth, David, all these fictional cartoon characters that never existed of any form or of any race whatsoever in the Bible, Quran, Talmud, as well as Buddha and Brahman, all of these fictional characters, fake religions. Those of our people who have been corrupted by white culture, they have, their presentation of ancestry religion, Akan ancestry religion on the continent has been corrupted as well. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan ancestry religion that is rooted in our Akan ancestry from ancient Kanat, the Khan land, Kanat, which is a title of ancient Nubia. Some of our people migrated from Kanat after the fall of Kemet, which is Egypt, and northern Kanat, northern Nubia, 2,000 years ago. We reestablished ourselves in the western part of the continent, reestablished the Kanat Empire, the Nubian Empire, the Ghana Empire. Subsequent to that, centuries later, some of our people moved further south because of Muslim invasions and reestablished Akana civilization in the Savannah and Forest Belt regions, what is today's Ghana and Ivory Coast. Then centuries subsequent to that, some of our people were forced into North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the Musso-Kessie, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. This is how we ended up in the West. However, we maintained our ancestral religious practices. Thus, Akan ancestry religion is called Winti in Suriname in South America, from the Akan term Winti. Akan ancestry religion is called Obia in Jamaica, from the Akan term Obai. Akan ancestry religion is called Hoodoo in North America, in the United States, from the Akan term Mdu, meaning medicine from roots, trees, plant life, root work, and so forth. It also means to become heavy, meaning heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. These definitions are also found for these terms in the language of ancient Kanat and Kemet. Thus, in the Medutu, the hieroglyphic writing, you will find Undu, meaning medicine from roots, trees, plant life. Undu also meaning to become heavy, meaning heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. Undu is also the term for the offerings we give on the shrines to the deities and ancestral spirits, and the offerings themselves, as well as the shrines called the Undu. We also have a class of spirits, deities called the Undu spirits. A title of ancient Nubia, Kanat, is also the Undun land, the people, the Undun people. So we're talking about Hoodoo, Akan ancestral religion in North America. So we maintained our ancestral religious practices even though we were forced into the Western Hemisphere, it was through the maintenance of our ancestral religious practices that we were guided and empowered by the Nananom Nsamampo, our spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, and the Abosom, the deities, the forces in nature connected to our blood circles. We were guided and empowered by them on the best means by which to wage war against the whites and their offspring, massacred them, and forced the end of enslavement in the Western Hemisphere through the waging of war, not only through taking up metal armaments, but also through the utilization of chemical and biological weapons of warfare. Root work is the precedent that established chemical and biological weapons of warfare in the Western Hemisphere. That is our ancestral religious practice, rooted in our ancestral religious convictions to eradicate our enemies as a component of divine order. So this is what we deal with. On Benada Abinada, we have Ojira Tuesday night, the Ojira broadcast, where we deal with ancestral religion in general, not just the Akan expression, but wherever Afro-Akani people exist, African black people exist in the world. Ancestral religion is our practice. It impacts every aspect of our lives, so we deal with how ancestral religion impacts every aspect of our lives, no matter what form it takes. In essence, ancestral religion is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. That means through ritual we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to incorporate in order to establish order in our lives, and we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to reject in order to restore balance to our lives. So the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance, these are the expansive and contractive poles of ancestral religion. We incorporate that which we need. We reject that which we do not need. That's expansion and contraction. We seek to align every thought, intention, and action with divine order every moment of every day. That is our ancestral culture, our way of life as Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people. When we make legitimate mistakes, then we engage the ritual process, the ritual incorporation of divine law, and the ritual restoration of divine balance so that we can realign our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order every moment of every day and get back on track with that operation in harmony with divine order, get back on track with our culture. This is how ancestral religion impacts every aspect of our lives as we seek to align every thought, intention, and action every moment of every day with divine order. So we deal with the purification, Ojira, purification of concepts, culture, cosmology, and so forth on the Ojira broadcast, because we state that Ojira purification operationalizes Nanasom, or ancestral religion. Purification operationalizes our practice of ritually incorporating divine law and ritually restoring divine balance. So that's what we deal with on the Ojira broadcast. On Awukuda Akwada Wednesday, we have Egwa Marketplace, where we showcase businesses, organizations, and institutions that are serving our community in a positive capacity. Also those who maintain their ancestral religious values in the context of that service to the community. We've showcased a number of businesses, organizations, and institutions. We also deal with the philosophical foundation of economics from an ancestral religious values perspective, a holistic approach to economic development. And we have published our Okom economic development model in that thing. On Yada Thursday night, also called Yada Abada, we have Amin Sim, Affairs of the Nation, where we deal specifically with issues that confront us as an Omain, a nation specifically, Ojira Omain, the purified nation, Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people in the Western Hemisphere. We recognize what an Omain is, a nation is. It's a living, breathing entity governed by specific forces in creation, just as your organ is an entity that has a specific energy complex, and the cells are the children of that organal structure. We are cells within a larger organal structure as Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people. We comprise a nation, an Omain, because we were forced into the Western Hemisphere. We live in a different region of the Earth Mother's body. However, we were directed to coalesce in a specific region in the west of the Earth Mother's body, directed by our ancestresses and ancestors to blend ancestral blood circles in this region of the Earth Mother's body, interface with the unique expression of the Earth Mother divinities, Asase Afua and Asase Yah in this region of their body on the planet interface with the unique expression of the Abosom, the forces in nature, the Orisha, the Vodou, as they manifest in this region in the Western Hemisphere of the Earth Mother's body, to interface with plant life, animal life, mineral life, as they manifest in this region physically for food as well as medicine, but also their spirit totems, plant totems, animal totems, mineral totems, and so forth. This confluence of interfacing in this region of the Earth Mother's body through the blended ancestral blood circles and bringing ancestresses and ancestors back through these blended blood circles allowed us to forge a locative identity, a unique expression of Akurakani Afraikani culture. So we therefore deal with Amanie, nationism, which is the purification of nationalism, an approach to nation building rooted in our unique expression of Afurakani, Afurakaini identity, rooted in our locative identity in the West. So our issues that we have, we must confront them from a nationist perspective, an Amanie perspective, an Afurakani, Afurakaini nationist perspective. That's what we deal with. Whatever issues are confronting us as an Omine, as Ojiramine, the purified nation of Afurakani, Afurakaini people in the West, we must deal with them from a nationist perspective, and therefore our nation-building efforts will be fruitful. So, tonight we want to get into this fourth part of the Afu Asar series. Initially, we made it three parts, but we want to complete it as a four-part series. We will be releasing the publication, including all of these four parts, in the very near future, but first we wanted to get this information out through this four-part series so people can begin to study and incorporate this information. So, this four-part series of Afu Asar, it is rooted in the 16 parts of the body of Asar and 16 symbol Adebisa or divination. So we started off talking about in the first part of the series that the body of Asar and the cosmology was cut up into 16 different pieces, not 14. When Asar is operating through the Osorane or the Joe through the moon, his dispensation of his divine living energy through that orb as it's going through its cycle from new moon to full and back to new moon, that waxing and waning, 14 days of waxing, 14 days of waning, and then the new moon and so forth. That's a dispensation of light and energy manifest through that light for that 14 expansion, 14 contraction, and so forth. But when we are talking about the division of the body of Asar, not the dispensation of light and therefore energy, but when you're talking about the division of the body of Asar, that's when Asar is operating through the star system called Sa, which is so-called misnomered Orion, and those 16 stars of Orion, the 12 attendants plus the four sons of Heru, which comprise those 16 stars of the body of Asar, as he operates the constellation of Sa, so-called Orion. We went into some detail about that. We also showed how it is related internally within our physical bodies to the 16 parts of the endocrine system that regulate order in the body, the master gland of the endocrine system and the master gland in the body. Of course, is the pituitary gland, that gland of Awusi, Asar, and so forth, and the endocrine system releasing hormones directly into the bloodstream. Those hormones carry directives for action within the various systems of the body and so forth. So Asar has, or Awusi, as it's called in Akan, Awusi, Awusia, Asir, Asi, Awisi, Ayisi, these different titles of Asi or Asir, in the Akan tradition, as we've shown, operating the divine endocrine system within the great divine body of the Supreme Being, operating through the endocrine system within the body of Afurakani, Afurakani people, a regulatory function that regulates the functions of other glands. That's what the endocrine system does. Asar has a regulatory function within creation, establishing regulatory order within creation, just like the endocrine system establishes regulatory order within the body. And, of course, in the great divine body of the Supreme Being, Asar has that function of establishing regulatory order within creation. Asar in ancient Kemet, also Asir, Asi, or Asi in Akan, Awusi, in Akan and so forth, different titles, Obatala in the Yoruba tradition, Danbe in the Vodun tradition, Agbu Isi in the Igbo tradition, and so forth. So we went into some detail about that, showing the endocrine system, all those 16 parts internally. Then in the third piece, we talked about Asar as Asar Sekre, and we talked about externally. So we talked about this relationship between the 16 stars and the constellation of Orion, 16 cowrie shells in Erin Dilogun, divination in the Yoruba tradition, and the I Ching, the palm nuts, the 16 palm nuts in the Yoruba Ifa system, and the 16 palm nuts with regard to Fa in Vodun. There's 16 symbol divination in Mali and various parts of the continent of Afuraka, Afuraikai. We showed how these are directly related to the 16 parts of the endocrine system within the body and so forth. We went into detail about that in part two and part three. We talked about Asar as Asar Sekre, talking about externally these 16 parts of Asar's body externally as ports of entry of divine living energy. So if we are forced in North America and we don't have access to cowrie shells to engage that 16 symbol divination and taking those 16 cowrie shells and gathering them up, the 16 parts of all Sar's body, and gathering them up into a harmonious unified whole so that we can communicate with the divinity and engage the divinatory process. If we don't have access to cowrie shells or access to I Ching palm nuts and so forth, or access to cockle shells, seashells and so forth, some of us would have that and utilize seashells instead of, you know, cowrie shells because we had the seashells over here, the cockle shells. But even some of our people didn't have access to that. Maybe they were enslaved somewhere or forced to work somewhere where they weren't near a beach, they weren't near a ocean front or a lake front or a river or something like that. So they didn't have that kind of access. So therefore, we talked about Asar Sekri, this 16 parts of the body, these points of entry externally, as gateways to the internal shrines of the deities, those 16 shrines within the body manifest the endocrine system and so forth. But those points of entry are the two eyes, the two ears, the nose, the mouth, the two hands, the two nipples that are directly above, the two lungs and so forth, ports of entry, like two ports, the negative and positive ports of the battery. That's what the nipples of the male and female are in reality, directly above the two lungs that stimulate life force, energy, and breath, and the heart-lung complex and so forth. Then you have the navel, you have the sex organ of the male, the sex organ of the female, the gonads of the male, the gonads of the female, as well as the soles of the feet. We also talked about the placenta being an endocrine organ. We also talked about the enteric endocrine system as well, part of that 16 parts, but externally, the soles of the feet and these different parts. Those are all 16 parts. When we engage the process of laying hands, the laying hands process, that healing process, placing our hands over these different 16 ports of entry externally that lead to the 16 shrines within the body, and when we lay hands and project that divine living energy that we have surging within us as healers and healeresses, then we can communicate directly with those shrines, provoke that energy within those shrines, and communicate with the Abosom that govern those shrines, and communicate with Ahusi Asar himself and so forth, and engage that process of inquiry, that Adebisa divinatory process, oracular divination. So utilizing the hands to go over the 16 parts of the body or gather up those 16 parts of the body and so forth is a form of 16 symbol divination, just like you would grasp those 16 shells and gather them up, grasp those I Ching, those 16 palm nuts, gather them up, grasp or gather up those 16 points of entry of the physical body of the Afurakani man or Afurakani woman. These are manifest through the 16 parts of the body of Asar. When they were gathered up and he was mummified, those 16 parts of the body, 16 parts of those divinatory systems were gathered up, mummified, unified in a harmonious whole, and once they were unified and he was mummified and crystallized and so forth, Then his spirit was resurrected and he went into the heavenly realm to operate with Ra and so forth as a divinity in nature, and of course taking his seat in the constellation of Sa or Orion, and then of course in harmony with his complement, Offset, who's operating through the star system Sepatit, misnomer Sirius. So Sepatit and Sa, or Sirius and Orion, or Offset operating through Sepatit and Osar operating through Sa. Those constellations stimulate our Aten, our Atenit, our sun, and of course that, you know, feeds our planet and so forth. So we talked about that process, that laying hands process. We talked about our sister Rekit Kajara Niyaya Nebethead with the Ra Seki system, utilizing that principle of laying hands to heal. That is a divinatory practice that we have continued. Even if we didn't have access to shells or some other implement, we use our hands over those 16 parts to engage the divinatory process and to heal. So here in part four, we want to show the other final piece with regard to that divinatory process that we maintain 16 parts of the body of Al-Sar, 16 symbol divination. It goes back to these 16 parts of the body that were drawn together, unified, mummified, and so forth, tied together, bound together in a unified whole. And once they're bound together, then we can communicate with the divinity that regulates that body. Now, the title Smoke, Ash, Mummification, 16 parts of Al-Sar and the 16 symbol divination. The reason we're talking about smoke, ash, mummification, this goes directly to the system as it's maintained here in North America. One of the systems is laying hands, but then we have another approach. People who are engaged in the Hoodoo tradition, which is the Akan ancestry religion, but then also in the Juju tradition, Wanga tradition, Voodoo tradition, in Gangan tradition, various expressions and so forth, different ways of doing this. We have another means by which we utilize certain ritual practices to deal with the entire unified body of Al-Sar for divination. Now, smoke and ash in relationship to one another and in relationship to a mummification process, and we're still mummifying one another. Those who practice the Hoodoo tradition, for example, Akan ancestry religion in North America, before we go before the shrine, we mummify the body. We mummify the body, and once we mummify the body and pull those 16 different parts together, then we can communicate with the divinity. How do we mummify the body? When you look at Awusi or Al-Sar, you will see that he is mummified and he has the great white crown. Of course, in the Yoruba tradition, Obatala is called the chief of the white cloth and so forth. And his sacred color is white, and it's the same thing in Fodun with Dangbe, the sacred color is white. And in the Igbo tradition, Agu Isi's sacred color is white. And one of the reasons for that, in the Akan tradition, we have a direct relationship linguistically as well as ritually. When you look at the term Awusi, the deity's certain name is Asi or Asir, which becomes Asi. In Coptic it's Usiri or Usi, and then in Akan it's Asi. But then there's a title of Asi or Asir, which is Awusi. The word for death in tree is Wu or Owu or Wu in some dialects. The word for sudden death is Awusin. Awusi is related to Awu, death being washed or cleansed or purified, Asi. The related term in the tree language is Wusiu, and Wusiu means smoke or steam. Smoke or steam is that which rises up. One of the definitions for Si, which is the root of Asi, and the when you look the way Al-Sar's name is spelled in ancient Kemet, the first part is Asi, which is the throne, and the second part is Eni, which is the eye. So you have Asi, Eni, or Asiri, the throne and the eye, but the first part is the throne, the one who establishes regulatory order. So you have that throne, and then you have the eye behind the throne. in Aset's name, you have the throne, and then instead of the I, you have the loaf, which represents the letter T, that concretizing form, but both of them have the Asi, or the throne, within their name. So the first part of his name is Asi, which is the throne. It means to establish. It also means to rise up, Si, which is establishing something. When you're establishing a nation or establishing a building, you're erecting something, you're rising something up, establishing something, and so forth. So smoke or steam, wusil, is that which rises up. Si is released as a result of heat or fire, as in solar, sun, fire, thus becoming part of the atmosphere. This steam or smoke, wusil, water and fire, like a spiritual entity, can enter the body or possess the body. Another definition of si is to possess, which is directly related to establishing regulatory order. The way the deities establish regulatory order within our population is through spirit possession. Si means to enter into the individual through spirit possession for the purpose of establishing. Standing the person up, erecting, making them erect, strong, edified, and so forth. So C meaning to rise up, C meaning to establish, C meaning to possess, and so forth. So smoke or steam, which is wusiu, like a spiritual entity, can enter the body or possess, I see, the body through the breath. The release of steam or smoke into the atmosphere is akin to the release of the spirit from the body via death, owu. So when you see smoke rising up, white smoke rising up, that's akin to the spiritual entity leaving the body and rising up from the body after owu, or death. And smoke rising up into the atmosphere, akin to the spirit rising up from the body via death, owu, into the atmosphere or ethereal matter, hui. So awusi is related to death, owu, sudden death, awusin, or awusisi, but awusin, and of course Al-Sar was killed, that was a sudden death. In the Akan language, awusin means sudden death. The spirit's connection to ethereal matter after death. Once the spirit is released from the body, and what we're doing right now is reading from our book, Akradin Boson, Volume 2, when we're talking about awusi and adua, Al-Sar and Al-Set, page 14. Once the spirit is released from the body, it is no longer constrained by physicality nor the physical dimension of time. Just as your spirit can move instantly within the dream state, so does the spirit have agility or freedom of movement in the after-death state. Awusi is thus referred to as the abosom of agility and has the power to increase your motive power while you live and act in the physical world. So he possesses, just like the steam, wusiu, possesses. You can breathe in steam. It gets inside the body, just like the spirit entering the body. Steam can rise up out of the body through the breath, just like the spirit leaving the body. So that entering into the body and leaving the body, spirit possession, and then the spirit leaving and so forth, Al-Sar governs that process. When the spirit gets inside the body, then it operates within the body to establish regulatory order within the person. But then if the person is a healer or a healeress, that spirit gets inside the body to establish regulatory order within the community. A deity is inside the body of the person. Now the people can come and communicate with the deity through the agency of the person's body that the deity is dwelling within. And the deity can heal. The deity can give direction. The deity can give admonitions and so forth to regulate order within the communal sphere. So that spirit possession, that descent of a spirit into the body, see, and then the spirit leaving the body, see, to establish regulatory order, see, and so forth, that it's all rooted in the name Asi, which the image is that of the Asi, the throne, and so forth, which establishes order within the spirit, within the body, within the community, and so forth. So we show that awusin, sudden death, awusiu, the smoke, fume, and so forth. So what happens in the hoodoo tradition, just like with the laying of hands over those energic ports, the 16 energic ports the two hands, the two eyes, the two ears, the nose, the mouth, the two nipples, the navel, the sex organ, the gonads, the two feet, and so forth, all these 16 different parts of the body, placing the hands over that and the laying of the hands process. So you're engaged in all those 16 parts of the 16 pieces of the divinatory system of the actual physical body. In the same fashion, in a different fashion, we will take forms of incense, for example, burning eucalyptus leaves and so forth, creating that wusil, that smoke, that steam, and then we take that smoke or steam, that sacred sanctuary of awusi, asar, that white purified smoke and so forth that rises up, see, to rise up, and then we purify. See also means to purify, to cleanse or purify. And just to go, if you go to the top of this particular article, we lay out the different definitions of the term S-I-C, the root of Asi, Asir, and we'll read those real quickly, and they're all cosmologically related. C, or Asi, to stand, to be fixed in an upright position, that is establishing order, to stand, to be fixed in an upright position. You often see Asar standing in a mummified position. C, well, I see, to sit in state in a stately manner, for example, as a king. So when you see or sit in state, you can stand, which is establishment. You can sit on a throne, that's establishment. C, the third definition, to place, to set. C, to rise, to come up. So you can sit something down, you can sit up and so forth. In fact, the English word sit and the English word set, excuse me, comes from the term si in Akan, but si comes from si, the same term in ancient Kemet, which is literally the seat or the throne. In the hieroglyphic symbol, the Medut symbol is literally the image of the throne, the si, which later in English became the seat, or that which is set upon or sat upon, and so forth. But si, to stand, to be fixed in an upright position, si, to sit in state, in the stately manner of the king, si, to place, to set, si, to rise, to come up, C, to step, to set foot into or upon. C, meaning to lead away. C, meaning to descend, to come down, to descend down into, to sit down inside of something like spirit possession. C, to come down upon, take possession of, as in the Abosun possessing someone. C, meaning to establish, to stick, to build, to raise up, to set in operation, to institute. That's establishing regulatory order, but first that possession must take place. C, meaning to wash, to cleanse. When a spirit possesses, enters into the body of someone, establishes regulatory order, makes them upright, stand upright, sit in a stately manner, and so forth. They are set, they are placed, and so forth. Then that process of that divine spirit moving through the person's body and establishing that order, and so forth, that is a cleansing process. That's why the term C also means to cleanse, to wash. C, and CC reduplicated, also means the lower part of the back, meaning support. That is the pelvic region, that is the seat, literally, of the body. And when you have that strong seat, that strong core at that base, then you can sit upright. If you have a problem with the lower back, then nothing else functions well, and so forth. So all those definitions of C are cosmologically related to the function of Asar or Asi or Awusi, establishing regulatory order within creation and so forth. So in the Hoodoo tradition, when we take that, the incense or burning the leaves of, for example, a eucalyptus plant, and the smoke is released, the wusiu, the smoke is released, that sacred energy of Awusi, which is called Wusio, the smoke or steam, and then we move it over the 16 parts of the body, the ports of entry, over the head, over the arms, over the hands, over the front of the body, over the every part of those 16 parts. Adults as well as children know to stand and put their arms out, and we go over each part, then they turn around and we go over the back part and so forth. So when you see in the text that the head of Asar and the eye and the ear and the hands and the back and the front and the loins and the soles of the feet and so forth, all these 16 parts of the body of Asar externally, we go over each one of those 16 parts with the wusil, the smoke or steam, that white smoke of steam, what are we engaged in? We're taking the energy of wusil, that white smoke, and we're quote-unquote mummifying the entire body. We're purifying C, to cleanse, to wash, to purify. We're establishing regulatory order, C, with the wusil, the smoke of Asi, of Asar. We're taking that white smoke and moving around the entire body. We're wrapping the entire body with that wusil, with that white smoke of Asar. We are literally mummifying the body and purifying the body with the white smoke. And when we're finished, the entire body has been mummified or wrapped up in that white wusil of Awusi. And now the person is purified. Their aura is purified. The kahibit is purified. We went through all the 16 external parts that lead to those internal 16 parts of the endocrine system, the shrines of Asar and the body and so forth. So now you have a mummified individual. Now that all the 16 parts have been unified through that ritual process and cleansed through that ritual process, now you can communicate with the divinities without distraction. You purified or repelled or rejected negative, you know, influences from other individuals, physical, living, as well as discarnate negative spirits who would seek to project negative thoughts and foolish ideas and perversity and lust and malice and so forth. You repel all of that, and now you have a purified individual. Just like you purify a physical body of somebody through mummification, thousands of years later, those bodies are still mummified and still preserved and so forth. We purify the spirit body of the person, the sahu, the spirit body of the individual, through wrapping the body in that white wusil of that smoke, going through all over all 16 parts of the body. Now the body is mummified. That is a divinatory practice. We do that when we're having group ritual and so forth, but even when we're about to divine individually with the divinities, the first thing we do is mummify ourselves and we align with Awusi by mummifying ourselves with that white smoke. Now we've been purified and so forth. This is why the title of Asar here is Asar Taiti. Tai means to tie, to bind. Tait is the female divinity of the wrappings or the linens that Asar's body is wrapped within. So he's called Asar Taiti, Asar, the one who's been tied or bound with the white linen and so forth by the goddess Tait, the Ntorot Tait. So he's Asar, who's operating within that mummified body through the divinity Tait. He's called Asar Taiti, the mummified one or the swathed one and so forth. That's why we're utilizing that title. So we just engage that process. Every time we go divine, this is one of the ways we maintain 16 symbol divination. We took the body, took the smoke of Awusi of Asar, went over each one of the 16 parts because they are 16 ports of entry, and you have to go over those 16 different parts because those are the portals through which the energy enters into the body and so forth. And once you go through those 16 parts, then the entire body is purified. It's no different than going through each one, going over each one of those 16 parts in a unified fashion. It's no different than gathering up 16 cowrie shells or gathering up 16 ikin palm nuts or 16 seashells and gathering them up into a unified whole. And then when you cast them once again, you can learn from the different parts that have been unified and learn specific things based on the patterns and so forth and the deities possessing and communicating directly with you. Releasing those shells in certain patterns, they radiate a certain kind of energy, and that magnetic energy frequency, depending on the pattern, is a magnet for a specific abosom or risha vodu to come forward and take up residence temporarily at the shrine so you can communicate directly with them. We're not just memorizing patterns, names of patterns, and verses. When we cast shells, and some are up and some are down, depending on the pattern, that generates a specific frequency of energy that resonates at the frequency of the divinity that governs that pattern, and then they are drawn to the space. And they come down, see, they become seated, see, they purify us, see, and we communicate directly with them. We have given them a see or a temporary seat to sit on within that pattern. Now they are sitting within that pattern, and we can communicate directly with that spirit, with that abosom, that divinity, and they can communicate with us and purify us through that wisdom so we can make proper decisions or inform our clients on what proper decisions need to be made or sacrifices need to be made and so forth. So that's what's happening in that form of 16 symbol divination, the purification with the smoke. But there's a relationship between the smoke, what's being released, that white form that rises up, I will see you. But what is being burned is the ash. And so if we look at ash as well, ash is the powder left behind. We utilize the ash ritually as well, and sometimes we utilize other substances as well. What if we didn't have access, you know, if we're on a plantation or something like that, we didn't have access to fire at that point. You're not supposed to be burning something. You draw the attention of the so-called slave master and so forth. When you're plotting to rebel, you don't want to draw attention, so you're not burning anything, or you don't have access at a particular point, so you can't use the ash to ritually, but you use a different kind of powder. Now, in the hoodoo tradition, this is the other form of mummification. We already talked about utilizing the wusil, the smoke, which is governed by Awusi, divinity, to mummify the body with that white form. You'll find in the hoodoo tradition as well, we use a different kind of powder, a dust. It is called gufa dust that is used by the gufa doctor. Now, gufa dust used by the gufa doctor, that is the hoodoo tradition. That is our Khan ancestry religion in North America. The whites and their offspring do not understand where that term came from because they have no knowledge of that. One of them put forth the false idea that gufa dust and the gufa doctor comes from the Congo term kufwa, which means to die. And they know that people will use certain forms of dust, including graveyard dust, to do certain things and put them in a bag and sprinkle them in different areas, the dust in different areas to affect a certain outcome. So they assume that gufa came from kufwa, K-U-F-W-A, kufwa, and it must be a Congo term and has something to do with to die. So, but then they don't understand what is the gufa doctor who utilizes the gufa dust. Because it's not a Congo term, the whites and offspring don't understand it's an Akan term. The gufa doctor is a form of healer or healeress. When we utilize specific powder, we didn't have the same powder we have on the continent, that the shidel, the white powdered clay and so forth. So we utilize what we have here, what we have access to here, and what we can and make here. But we utilize that gufa dust, sometimes in the form of white powder. That's what we're talking about tonight. But then we also have, you know, utilizing charcoal and so forth, the black powder. We also utilize red brick dust or other forms of red clay powder and so forth, as well as gold dust when we had access to it. But tonight, specifically in this particular context with regard to the 16 symbol divination, we're talking about the white powder. And we can, you know, gather that from certain forms of clay or even eggshells being ground up and so forth. But we are talking about the white powder, some certain forms of leaves and so forth, sometimes ash, but sometimes not that. So we utilize that powder as a gufa doctor. First and foremost, it is utilized all over the body. We would take the powder, the white powder, smear it all over our bodies. All over our bodies, meaning the 16 points of entry. Now, we talked about the 16 parts of the body of Al-Sar, those entry points to that divine living energy, that Tumi, that power, all over the different parts of the body. Once we smear the white powder all over our bodies, then we engage the communicative process, the divinatory process. We have literally mummified ourselves with that powder. Once our bodies are encased in that, we become purified. See, We become mummified. We become impenetrable with regard to decay as well as regard to the negative projections from discarnate spirits and so forth. So when we go into the spirit realm and communicate with the divinities, or even when spirit possession takes place, the only kind of spirit that comes through is a deity or an honored or spiritually cultivated ancestor or ancestress. And any other negative projections or other negative entities are repelled. They're not able to come through. So we're talking about that possession. So you have the powder smeared all over the body. Once it's smeared all over the body, you have just engaged in the mummification process. We didn't have those ritual bands and so forth to tie ourselves or band ourselves with and so forth. We utilize that power to mummify ourselves once we became all, quote-unquote, white, just like Al-Sara's entire body plus his crown, his tall white crown and so forth, once we became purified like him. Just as in the cosmology in ancient Kemet, once his body was purified, mummified, bound, pulled together in a harmonious fashion, and made impervious to decay, then his spirit was resurrected, as it says in the Shabaka text and so forth, and then he moved forward as a divinity in creation. The same thing happens with us. Once we're purified, then we can stand up, see, rise up, and go into the spirit realm and communicate with the Abosum and Nananomansma for the deities and ancestral spirits. But first, we must mummify ourselves on the 16 parts of the body of Awusi. This is what's taking place. So we're the Gufa doctor, first and foremost, smears the entire body. Then also, and then that facilitates possession, spirit possession. Also, dust can be used to cast on other people, and then possession takes place with them as well. But also cast the dust and sprinkle it in different implements, as well as different areas to affect a specific result as well. But that is secondary. What is primary is the smearing of the dust on the body, on the 16 parts of the body, those entry points of energy. That's the key. That's the 16 symbol divination, even if we don't have access to shells. We don't have access to, palm nuts and so forth. We don't have access to seashells, possibly, of course, not cowrie shells. Then, and if someone is not, that hasn't been part of their family tradition in their specific line, or they don't have somebody in the line, the person that was in the line that did the laying of the hands, they're not in the area and so forth. Another form of that is that, and if we don't have access to the smoke with burning the eucalyptus and so forth, or a substitute with sage or something like that, we don't have access to that. We utilize that white powder instead of mummifying ourselves with the white smoke, the wusiu. We mummify ourselves with the white powder and engage that same process and communicate via Awusi Al-Sara with the other divinity. Now, that's the Gufa dust, first and foremost, from the Gufa doctor, male or female. Now, if you read about what Gufa dust is by the whites and their offspring, they'll talk about, for example, you can read this on any site, Gufa dust is a very old African-American hoodoo curio used to trouble, harm, or kill an enemy. In particular, it can cause the victim's legs to swell up, and medical doctors will not be able to effect a cure. Recipes for making it vary. They talk about different little recipes and so forth. They'll say a continuum of shared and overlapping ingredients like graveyard dust to Gufa dust and all these other different things that manufacturing. They talk about Robert Ferris Thompson in his book Flash of the Spirit talking about it's a Kikongo word, Kufwa, meaning to die. Among older hoodoo practitioners, this derivation is very clear. They don't understand where it comes from. Then they recite or cite an account from the so-called 19th century of a Gufa doctor engaged in a ritual process. When you read about that specific account, yes, he utilizes quote-unquote Gufa dust, but before he utilizes it in the form of dust, he smears it over his entire body. And the whites and their offspring skip over that part. They don't focus on that part. They just focus on the part that they're familiar with and they think they know about because they've observed, which is the sprinkling of the dust for certain specific things. That's the secondary usage. The primary usage is the smearing of the body. They don't understand that usage because they cannot become possessed by any deity, so they don't even know what the smearing of the body is. And because they don't know what a gufa doctor is, in reality, all they're focused on is the dust. We talked about how we use it in the hoodoo tradition. So we purify ourselves, and then once we're purified and, you know, smear with the dust, then we go into the ancestral realm or the realm of the divinities and communicate. And this is how we divine, even if we don't have other elements or implements, we divine and so forth and receive direction from the deities, ancestral spirits through spirit possession, spirit communication, and help our people. When you look in the Akan tradition on the continent, you find the exact same thing. We show images of that in the Akradim Bosom book. When the priest or priestess who is in the Akom state, the term Kom means to become possessed, when the spirit Komu goes, Komu within, Komu or Kom, that is the possession state. The possession people are the Kom Fo, meaning the Fo or the folks, the people who engage in the Akom state. Kom means to possess or seize or grasp. That's what the spirit is doing, is Kom, possessing the individual. You find that in the Akan language, and the people are called Akom Fo. Kom in ancient Kemet in the Medutu means to possess, to seize, to grasp as well, because it's the same language. So Kom meaning that in ancient Kemet and Kanat, Kom meaning the same thing in Akan. So the Kom Fo in our Kwamu dialect, Akom Fo, Akom Fo. But in the Asante dialect, they have the diphthong, so instead of Akom Fo, it's Akom Fo, like Foa. The diphthong goes from Foa, whereas in the Akwambo dialect, it's just Fo, and they don't add the diphthong at the end, the dropping at the end. So Akom Fo for the Akwambo people, Akom Fo amongst the Asante and other related dialects. Kom Fo became Kom Fo, the Kom Fo person, the healer or healeress, who's the Kom Fo, became the Kom Fo or the Kom Fo or the Gumpa or the Gofa person here, the gofa doctor with the gofa dust, or gufa dust, depending on the dialect, the part of the south you're talking about. The reason why he or she is called a gufa doctor, or the kumfwa doctor with the kumfwa dust, is because when you look in the Akan tradition on the continent, the akumfwa is the one who gets possessed. The indication that they are possessed is the deity directs the people to go get the powder and put it all over their bodies. That white powder is smeared all over their body. So when you see the white powder all over the body, that means the deity has possessed, or the ancestral spirit has possessed. They have become mummified. Those white wrappings of Al-Sar on the body and the white crown, the entire body is covered with white. Now they have been possessed by the divinity. That's the first and foremost. That's the link. That's the key. Then sometimes they will take that powder and cast it on someone else. And once the powder hits the other person, then they become possessed. But then secondarily, some of the powder can be used and taken and sprinkled on the shrines of the Abosom, sprinkled on the shrines of the Nananom Nsamafo, the deity, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, also used in Asumain, in talismans and so forth for specific ritual purposes. But first and foremost, the shirel, or the white powdered clay, is smeared over the body to facilitate possession. The person becomes Osarianized or mummified with that white powder so they can repel all negative entities and receive the Abosom, receive the spirits of the divinity through possession. That same Kumpwa or Kumpwa becomes the Gumpwa or the Gufa doctor in the Hoodoo tradition. So just like we have Akumpwa, the Akumpo, the priest or priestess in the Akan tradition, in Jamaica, in Obia, in the tradition, you have the Kumpo man or the Kumpo woman, utilizing the exact same terms. In North America, we still have the same priesthood or priestesshood, and we still call them the exact same thing, the Gumpa doctor or the Gufa, male or female doctor, utilizing the Gufa dust. It has nothing to do with the Congo, Kikongo language. They have no understanding, the whites and offspring, trying to figure out or deduce what it possibly means, because they had no idea that hoodoo is an Akan term. So they were looking in different areas and trying to manufacture definitions. We did an entire broadcast on the Gufa doctor and the Gufa dust and so forth previously, and showing that etymology and so forth, but we just wanted to touch on that here. What happens is, first and foremost, the Gufa doctor smears his entire body. That's the part that the whites and offspring skip over because they didn't understand it. So the only thing they could focus on is the secondary use of the powder, which was sprinkling up it in different areas, certain parts of, you know, areas where they're trying to affect a specific outcome. And they would see us sprinkling the powder in certain ways, or sprinkling it on people, or putting it in a talisman and so forth, a quote-unquote form of a mojo and so forth. And they would say, well, that's what it is. It's all about the dust. It's all about the Gufa powder. It's all about the dust. It's all about the graveyard dust or the rattlesnake skin dust or whatever it, whatever they began to utilize or, you know, adapt with. And therefore, the whites and their offspring would say, it's all about the dust. So it must be talking about the graveyard, and therefore it must have something to do with death, and therefore it must be the Akongo language Kufwa, meaning to die, and that's all it is. But they don't realize that first and foremost, the dust is directly related to the spirit possession, the mummification of the person. So this is why we have Osar Taiti. You'll also find, for example, on the Crackers website, they have a link to a specific account from, as we said, the 19th century. The name of it is Dinky the Gufa King, a conjure doctor in Missouri in 1840 by William Wells Brown, M.D. So William Wells Brown was formerly enslaved, and he became free and so forth. He started writing about his experiences and so forth, and he wrote about different experiences on a plantation, but also experiences with others that he communicated with even after he became free and so forth. And one of those writings, and he became a physician and so forth, but one of those writings had to do with Dinky, as he calls him, Dinky the Gufa King. Now, it's a extensive piece, but there's just one piece we want to pull out, which shows the ignorance and the idiocy of the whites and their offspring, and how they misrepresent the tradition. If you're reading through the piece, and they're talking about how all the people on the plantation, they feared Dinky, the Gufa man, because he was engaged in the ritual practices and so forth. He was never whipped. None of the so-called slave masters never whipped him, and he never did any work. And that was going on for years. He was doing whatever he wanted to do, never got punished, and never did any work. Then they brought in a new overseer from a different place, and he was known as being a very tough, you know, criminal-type overseer who will whip anybody and torture anybody. He learned about this older man named Dinky, and they said, what is he doing? And they said, oh, well, he doesn't do any work. And he said, oh, I'm going to beat this nigga today, and he's going to start doing some work. And all the people who were enslaved were scared because they heard about this terrible overseer and so forth. And he called Dinky out, and he said the next morning he was going to bring him out and he was going to tear him apart. And he's going to start obeying from this point on. Then they have part of the story when they ask, what happened the night before? What did Dinky do ritually? Because the next day when everybody came out and the overseer came out and called Dinky into the barn or whatever, and everybody was standing outside and they were scared because after years of him not working and never being whipped, finally this terrible overseer was going to torture him and so forth. At some point they came out, he let Dinky go, he never whipped him, and Dinky didn't do any work. So this writer is trying to figure out, okay, what happened? What happened the night before? What went on? So they went to an older enslaved Afurakani man who was like 90 years old named Ned, and they asked him, okay, what happened the night before? Did you see what took place? What did Dinky do? So there's a portion where he lays it out. I just want to read that section. Now, they said Negroes everywhere stood in mortal fear of Uncle Dinky. The blacks who saw him every day were always thrown upon their good behavior when in his presence. I once asked a Negro why they appeared to be afraid of Dinky. He looked at me, shrugged his shoulders, smiled, shook his head, and said, "I ain't afraid of the devil, but I ain't ready to go see him just yet." He then took a look around and behind as if he feared someone would hear what he was saying, and then he continued, "Dinky's got the power, sir. He knows things seen and unseen, and that's what makes him his own master." And then the writer says, it was literally true. This man was his own master. He wore a snake skin around his neck, carried a petrified frog in one pocket and a dried lizard in the other. Then he talked about a slave speculator once came along and offered to purchase Dinky, and then he was sent back because he didn't do any work. Then they going through the whole story about the new overseer that came, that was the one who was known for torturing people and everything, and at the end of the day, he didn't do anything to him. Now, when they asked the old man what happened, I want to scroll down to that part. Okay, so he says, and the old superannuated slave knew more about the affairs of the conjurer than anyone else. Ned told of how on the previous night, Dinky had slept but little, had closely inspected the snake skin around his neck, the petrified frog and dry lizard in his pockets. And remember, we talked about this in a previous broadcast when we talked about mummification with regards to animal totems. In ancient Kemet, we would mummify, you know, crocodiles and mummify the different when the animals, sacred animal totems, when they would make their transition. We didn't just bury them, we would mummify them, and they would still be shrines, animal totem shrines for specific divinities. Here in the Western Hemisphere, of course, we couldn't mummify, you know, animal totems like that. So what we do is we would dry them out. And then once we dried them out, they would become literally shrines for the deities that utilize them as animal totems. So they talk about he inspected the snake skin around his neck, the petrified frog and the dry lizard in his pockets. And here's the key. And had rubbed himself all over with Gufa. And when he had finished, he knelt and exclaimed, and then he lifted this entire prayer. He claims that, you know, Dinky was praying to the devil and asking him for his assistance. And of course, he wasn't praying to the devil, he was praying to the Yabosa and the Nananom Unsamafo. Now, with bated breath, everyone listened to Uncle Ned. This is the elder 90-year-old enslaved Afrakani man who was telling the story of what happened the night before, because he witnessed what happened the night before, Dinky was supposed to be getting whipped by the new overseer. All had the utmost confidence in Dinky's power. None believed that he would be punished. Well, so they go into a number of different things. So later on in the story, at the end of the day, we're not going to read through the whole story, but at the end of the day, the next day he came out, the overseer brought him out, as we said, and then the overseer looked shook, and he decided he was not going to whip Dinky. He never whipped him. Dinky didn't do any work and so forth. Some of the crackers would come to Dinky and ask him about their love life, like they talked about a female coming and asking him certain things, and he did divination and told her what particular man was in love with her and why, how he felt and all this other kind of stuff, and she gave him different pieces of silver every time he did a divination to tell her different things and so forth. So, and he would start doing a divination, telling her what the guy was thinking about her and so forth. And then he would say, "Oh, things are getting a little dark. I think I'm going to need a little something extra in order to keep seeing what I'm seeing." And then she would reach in her purse and give him some more silver. And he's like, "Okay, I can see some more now." And he would tell her some more. So he was playing her like that. He would tell her a few little things that were true, but then he'll act like he couldn't see anything so he can get some more money. But he's living on the plantation. He's walking around every day. All the people who are enslaved on the plantation fear him, but they also know they can get medicine from him here, from him to be healed, and they talk about a story of him healing a little boy who got actually attacked and hit by a ram, and him healing the boy and so forth. But they all feared him. They didn't want to cross him, but they also knew he could heal. But the white people would not make him work, so he didn't do any work, and they would never whip him. So there's this one other piece. So the first part is he smeared himself all over with the goopher dust, and he was engaged in, he was a goopher doctor. But then the second part is they later talked about sprinkling dust and so forth. Here's the foolishness. Here's a gloss that one of the whites in their offspring is trying to give some explanation about what's taking place. In brackets, they put, the fact that Dinky, quote-unquote, sprinkled his goofer from a snakeskin bag indicates that it was a powder, and again demonstrates that, to Brown, the person who was writing this, that gooferism was a generic term for conjuring with powders. Also note that because rattlesnakes are not found anywhere in Africa, but have always been much revered in Native American religion and magic, Brown is showing us that Dinky had adopted a custom of or a manner of working from his Native American colleagues. Thus, in Dinky's keeping with his African goofer powder in a Native American style rattlesnake skin bag and sprinkling it onto a lucky European style horseshoe, because they talk about later on he sprinkles some goofer dust over a horseshoe, onto a lucky European-style horseshoe to allow his white client to conquer her lover. We see an early and clearly demonstrable example of a full-blooded African, because they said Dinky was a full-blooded African. So what they're saying is he either came directly from the continent, but in this context, that means his, in these writings, when they say he was a full-blooded African, that means he either came directly from the continent or both of his parents came directly from the continent. They were enslaved, and then they gave birth to him. So he was a full-blooded African. He had not been mixed with any Native American, or sometimes in this context, when these kind of writers are writing in the 19th century, they had not, been here long enough to mix with the black people who had been here for maybe the past 100 years on the plantation. Like some of their insurmountable came here in the 1700s. His people came in 1800s, so they've been here for 100 years. These white writers in the 19th century, in this case a black writer, would say, well, the ones who've been here for about 100 years, they're now quote-unquote slaves or quote-unquote African-Americans. They would say they're no longer full-blooded Africans, which is nonsense. But he just came, his people just came, so he just got here, so they would call him a full-blooded African. So this is why they're saying that. They're saying we see an early and clearly demonstrable example of a full-blooded African root doctor in America incorporating Native American and European magic into the practice of conjuring. Now, that's pure stupidity, and it's 100% false. First of all, when he smeared his entire body with the goofa dust, that is the Akan tradition of the Kufa man, Kufa woman, the Okumfo. The Okumfo, whether it's a male or female, the Okumfo puts the white powder all over their bodies for spirit possession and to communicate with the divinity. He continued to do the same thing. That was the first thing he did. The casting of the dust and the sprinkling of the dust comes later. That's secondary. And sometimes that's not even done secondarily. It's only done to, only the smearing on the whole body is done. They don't know anything about that. So they skip over the fact that he smeared his body. They just say, okay, he smeared his body, and then they go on to the next thing. But the smearing of the body is the most important thing. That directly relates it to Akan tradition. Even the name Gufa Doctors is a class of priesthood and priestesshood. But then the next thing they say is, okay, he's utilizing rattlesnakes. There are no rattlesnakes in Africa. So he must have learned the use of rattlesnakes from his quote-unquote Native American colleagues, but he didn't have any Native American colleagues. So the whites in their offspring are making the assumption, well, since there are no rattlesnakes in Africa, he must have learned how to utilize rattlesnakes and the energy of rattlesnakes and then later the skin of rattlesnakes from Native Americans. So now he's incorporated Native American ritual into gooferism or conjurism, which is pure stupidity. When we come over here, as we've talked about many times before, if the python, the enini, is an animal totem for our clan, for both some Muturuk or and so forth, and that's the animal totem for our clan, we come over here, there are no pythons over here. But the Abosom will show us which specific animal that they operate through over here. So the same divinity, Bosom Muru, will show you, well, over here in the west, we don't have any Enini or pythons over here, but that rattlesnake that you see over there, that's my animal totem as well. So you communicate and utilize that. I communicate with you, and I will send that rattlesnake when I have messages for you or want to bring energy to you or utilize it for healing and so forth. So we learn that directly from the Abosom that we carry in our blood circle, and then we begin to use the skin of the rattlesnake as a quote-unquote replacement or cousin animal totem or achinebwa over here. The same thing with plant life, the same thing with mineral life. Certain plants that we didn't have on the continent that we have over here, the Abosom will show us, this is my plant. The Abosom that governs your Patra clan and Matra clan, they will tell you through direct communication, this is the plant that I operate through over here in this region of the Earth Mother's body. We learn that from them, and then we utilize that. That is what our kind people do, and that's what all Afrakani people do. We're not sitting around like, well, we're going to have to sit around and ask some pseudo-Native Americans how to function in this part of the world because we can't do anything. That's pure stupidity. We communicate with the Earth Mother, Asase Afu and Asase Ya, the Earth Mother divinities, both of them. They show us what plant life, mineral life, as well as the Patra clan and Matra clan divinities, as well as the deity that governs our crown. We learn directly from them. So it had nothing to do with any Native Americans. He learned the animal totem directly from the deity that governs that animal totem, and he incorporated that new specific species of snake into his ritual practice directly from his Akan ancestresses and ancestors and the Abosom that governs him. Then they said he sprinkled gopher dust over the horseshoe. The whites and their offspring will utilize horseshoes and hang them over the doors, lucky horseshoes and so forth, as part of a European practice. So when they said he started sprinkling gopher dust over a horseshoe as part of a ritual practice, they're saying, well, now he learned European magic and he incorporated that into conjure. That had nothing to do with any silly European magic. When someone is a child of the Abosom Benna and they're born on Benna Da, or so-called Tuesday, Benna in the Akan tradition is called Beda in Ejikamet, Heru Beda or Heru Behudet, the deity that governs the planet Benna or Bedat, which is Mars, the red planet, planet of war and so forth, but also governs hot metal, inclusive of iron, but hot metal in general. He's called Ogun in the Yoruba tradition, Ogun in Vodun and so forth, the Kenga in Igbo, Benna in Akan. But the term Gu means to cast metal in Akan as well, and the Ogufo is the metal casters, the Ogu people, the people engaged in the Gu process. Same as Gu in Yoruba and Gu in Vodun. So, Benna is Ogufo, the metal caster. So, say he's born on a Tuesday, Benna Da. If he was living on the continent, of course, he would be utilizing Adade or iron as part of his ritual process. Because that's one of those metals utilized by Benna, governing iron and metal in general. He comes over here, yet just like there's iron over there, of course, there's iron over here, so he can still utilize that, you know, mineral. If there was no iron over here, he would have to find out from the Earth Mother divinities what mineral life to use. But as it stands, yes, there is iron over here, so when he comes over here, he's in this new territory, he's looking around, he's not working as a blacksmith. He doesn't have access. He's not sitting around forging iron and so forth. He has to grab whatever he can. If he sees an iron slag somewhere, he'll grab that. But if the whites and their offspring took some iron and made it into the form of a horseshoe, He doesn't care about the fact that it's in the form of a horseshoe. It's iron. So he's going to take what he can get, and he's going to utilize that iron just like he utilized on the continent. Just because it's in the form of a horseshoe, it doesn't matter. He's not doing horseshoe magic. He got a piece of iron. It's the same thing that happens with people in the Juju tradition, which is the Yoruba tradition in North America. If they're living in the inner city, and or even if they were living on a farm in ancient, you know, in Alabama or Mississippi or something like that in the early so-called 20th century and so forth, or in the late 19th century, and they're a child of Ogun, they need to utilize iron in their ritual practice. They're going to grab a piece of iron from wherever they can get it. And once the White Canal Springs started building railroads in the 1800s and so forth, and they had our people working on railroads, one thing that our people saw was, oh, these are big, huge spikes made of iron. I'm going to steal a couple of these, take a couple of these, because this is iron. They don't care about the fact that it's made into a spike. They're not doing railroad spike magic. They just need a piece of iron. If it's in the form of a spike or not, it doesn't matter. They need some iron that resonates, that frequency that's a magnet for the divinity. So they grab spikes. And you'll see that in the Juju tradition, Yoruba tradition in North America, that people will get a little cauldron, they'll put iron spikes, you know, from a railroad. It's not because it's a railroad. They just need the metal itself. He did the same thing. He had a child of Benna. He's going to grab some iron. If it's a strip of iron, he'll grab that. If it's in the form of a horseshoe, he'll grab that. Whatever's laying around, he's going to take it. It had nothing to do with him going to some Europeans and learning European horseshoe magic from Europeans, which is nonsensical and foolishness anyway, and now he's incorporating European magic. That is pure stupidity. So this is a link from the Lucky Mojo site. The Lucky Mojo site is full of fraud, full of misinformation, foolish pseudo-analysis, idiocy, making money off of fake pseudo-hoodoo tradition and so forth, owned by a cracker female, you know, white so-called Jew and so forth, making millions of dollars selling products mainly to crackers, but then some of our people who don't know any better are purchasing products from this cracker. You shouldn't purchase anything from this cracker. Site is full of misinformation. They'll take information from certain sources and just post it, but then when they start editorializing on what it means, if they have some long account that was written by an enslaved Afurakani, Afurakaiti person, and they have their long account that's in some publication, and they post it, that's one thing, but then they start trying to tell you what it actually means, like this, when they're talking about he incorporated Native American European magic, which is pure stupidity. They don't understand the practice of our people having animal totems in our blood circle. This fool, Catherine Ironwood, who controls Lucky Mojo, on the website is talking about there are no animal totems in hoodoo, which is pure stupidity. Talking about only time you have animal totems in the hoodoo tradition is when people start mixing Native Americanism into hoodoo and start bringing Native American animal totems, but in real hoodoo there are no animal totems. In real hoodoo there is no pantheon of deities. This lying criminal cracker is lying about the tradition because she doesn't know anything about the tradition. We have animal totems. We have the full pantheon of deities, the Gufa doctor, male and female, the Kumfa, male and female, the Kumfo, Akumfo, male and female, the Akan man and Akan woman, Akanji man and Kanji woman, the Kanche man and Kanche woman, the Odumafo or the Hudumafo, the Huduman, Hudu woman. These are all different titles of priests and priestesses in the Akan tradition, and they are maintained in the Hoodoo tradition, of course, because it's the same tradition. So we go into some detail about the whole Gufa Dust piece in that other broadcast, but we just wanted to show how much misinformation these crackers are putting out, and they're putting it out as though they are authorities on our tradition, but they know nothing about our tradition. And then some of our people read this nonsense, they've memorized it, and then they start putting up hoodoo websites and talking about what they're doing. And once it comes to where do you get that from, they start referring to sites like this as their foundation. Some of our people getting involved in mixed corruption of hoodoo over the past 100+ years. They're mixing different things from the Congo tradition and various traditions around the continent that were brought over here, and they're trying to promote the false idea that hoodoo is a Bantu tradition or hoodoo is a Congo tradition or hoodoo is a tradition from central Afrika, Afrikai, or the Dogon and so forth, because they never had any real knowledge of where it comes from. They never knew the Akan Foundation. They don't know anything about Akan ancestral religion and how every aspect of the hoodoo tradition is Akan down to the names of all the different things that we utilize in the tradition. So that's the key we wanted to go over. But the 16 symbol divination, this form of the mummification of Alsar, Alsar Taiti, and being bound up in the white bandages, purified, impenetrable with regard to decay, we use that same Gufa dust as Gufa doctors, male and female, to purify ourselves with that white powder and so forth. And once we engage that process, then we can engage the divinatory process. But that white powder goes over all 16 parts of the body. That is 16 symbol divination preserved in the hoodoo tradition, whether it's the powder or the smoke, the wusil, the smoke utilized to purify all 16 parts of the body so that we're mummified with that smoke, that white substance and so forth, so we can engage the divinatory process as well. That's the information we want to go through. So the as we've been talking about over the past, you know, year in reality, and especially over the past couple of weeks, this information is going to be incorporated in our film that we are working on, the documentary film. We started filming in Florida 2 weeks ago. We had a good session, some days in Florida filming with Sashat. We filmed her segment and so forth. We're going to be in Georgia very soon, and then Alabama, Mississippi, and Chicago, and Ohio, and so forth, and then culminating in New Orleans on Memorial Day weekend. We already have our retreat, the Ka'et, Soul of Hoodoo and Voodoo Training, Cultural and Ritual Retreat, which is Memorial Day weekend. Myself and Voodoo Queen Kalinda Laveau will be having that retreat. We do have still a couple of spaces left open, so if you would like to register, do so ASAP. Go to our website, the Kakaya page on our website. You can register for that retreat, two-day retreat. We're going to be focusing on Oberima Afrikaani manhood, Obatain Afrikaani womanhood in the context of ancestral religious values. We'll be hosting, having those workshops. I'll be conducting the workshops for the males, the men. Voodoo Queen Kalinda Laveau will be conducting the workshops for the women, but we also have joint workshops as well as going to Congo Square for ancestral ritual and a number of different things, vegan meals and so forth. So we'll be giving away books, the training books, of course. So all of that is included on the website. We have a couple of spaces left. So ASAP, if you plan to attend, it's only 3 weeks away now, actually less than 3 weeks. So first come, first serve, those last couple of spaces, you can sign up for that, register for that. But we would like to, that we can also, we're going to finish the filming. I just want to make sure somebody said there was an issue with the sound, but we're going to finish the filming. We plan to finish, make the last filming segments there. So we're going to, the goal is to get to Ohio with Mama Mawusi and Georgia, Kajara, as well as going to Alabama, Mississippi, and Chicago for the other segments so that we can finish in New Orleans on Memorial Day weekend, and then we'll start the post-production process after that weekend so that by the end of June, then we can have the film complete or released. That is the schedule that we're working on. We are at 68% of our crowdfunding goal for the film. We're trying to get to 70% and, of course, on to 75% and so forth. Yet I say to everyone who's contributed, especially over the just period, but over the past couple of weeks, we moved from 59% to 68%. And over the past few days, we moved from like 66% to 68%. So every day, anytime people give, make a contribution that assists us in moving forward, the only way we can complete the film on time, on schedule, so we can, you know, release the project, is with your assistance. So if you have not had a chance yet to contribute to the film, we're in our 68th week, and we're at 68% of the crowdfunding effort. We've had 133 people contribute so far. It's about 243 contributions, because many people have contributed twice over the past year. We started last January, so 68 weeks. So if you have not yet had a chance to contribute to the film project, please do so today. Go take a few minutes now. The fundraiser campaign, fundrazr.com/AmadoCapo_Adebisa. We're dealing with the forms of divination that we preserved in our blood circles here in North America. Hoodoo, the Akan ancestry religion in North America. Juju, the Yoruba ancestry religion in North America. Grigri, but also Voodoo, the Fonin Ebe ancestry religion in North America. Wanga, the Ovambo Gullah tradition in North America. Ngengain, the Fong ancestry religion in North America. Myself, Voodoo Queen Galinda LeVoe. Wabet, Seshat Tutankhwajet. Reki Kajara Niyaya Nebehet, and Mama Mawusi Ashakir. All of us will be in the film showcasing these different forms of divination we preserved in our blood circles that empowered and guided our ancestors and ancestors towards waging war against the whites and their offspring and forcing the end of enslavement. Our wars of liberation through taking up metal armaments, as well as using chemical and biological warfare through root work, which have led to multiple wars against the whites and their offspring and forcing the Civil War to take place and forcing the end of enslavement, that was powered by ancestral religion and the divinatory practices we maintained in our blood circles. We are not dependent on anyone outside of our direct ancestral blood circles for our ancestral religion. We're not dependent on going to the continent, spending thousands of dollars for initiations, or going to the Caribbean or South America, spending thousands of dollars on initiations. We have maintained our priesthoods and priestesshoods in our blood circles here in North America, in the United States. Juju men and Juju women, Hoodoo men, Hoodoo women, Voodoo men, Voodoo women, Wanga men, Wanga women, Ngengain men and Ngengain women, we've maintained these traditions, and we are reestablishing them, bringing them to the fore, as opposed to them being in the background and hidden, people not wanting to talk about them or pretending like they're not practicing and so forth. We're bringing them and establishing them, seek to establish on a firm foundation. This is what the film is about. So this is what we're dealing with. So we have two things going on. On one hand, the event on Memorial Day weekend, the Kakai Soul of Hoodoo and Voodoo Retreat. So if you would like to sign up for that, we have a few spaces for that left. And then the other piece, even if you couldn't make it to that, but if you would like to support the effort, if you would like to receive one or more of our 30 books in return for your donation, and any donation amount, whether it's $10 or $20 or whatever it is, that assists us towards our goal. So you can receive books. Just let us know in the comments section when you make your donation, your contribution, which books you would like to receive. You can look at our 30 books on the publications page on our website. The ebook versions of all 30 of our books are free downloads on our website, and then we have the soft cover versions available as well. So if you would like to receive some books in return for that, just let us know in the comments section when you make the donation. You can comment there and let us know which ones you would like. So we're going to end the broadcast here. If you have any questions, just send us an email via Facebook or directly to our email on the website. But we will be back on tomorrow for Ojida. So, Yerase, we thank you for tuning into the broadcast. And Yebeshi Abio, we will meet again. That's all.